London Calling. London Walks Connecting. This is London. This is London Walks. Streets ahead. Story time. History time. Good morning, London. I've got Simon Law with me. Simon is the most wonderful guide. Simon gets more rave reviews than any other London Walks guide. So let's start by finding out a little bit about Simon. Simon, where'd you come from? Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Berkshire, David. But my father worked at Heathrow Airport as an engineer. So we moved nearer when I was a tiny baby to the airport and grew up in the London borough of Hounslow, as it became, in a tiny place called Bedfont. It's right on the edge of London. If you go any further, you're out of Greater London. If you go any further west.
How old were you when you moved there then?
I think about 2 months old.
Oh, I see. So
I was, yeah.
You're a lifelong Londoner, really, then.
Sort of.
Aren't you?
Yeah. Sort of. Yeah. Suburbanite.
Hey, Simon, when I was a little boy, I wanted to be a baseball player. What did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a vet.
Did you?
A vet, yeah. Then a dentist.
Oh, my gosh.
Then I thought I was going to be a barrister, because on University Challenge, the quiz program for students, I wanted to say that my name is Law, reading law. Which that was the sole motivation for me to apply to do a law degree, which I soon realised wasn't for me. And I left university and later went back.
Yeah. So to ask the obvious question, you wanted to be a vet. Is that, I mean, did you have a pet dog or something?
No, we had a cat. We had a succession of cats.
Uh-huh.
I remember our first cat, my dad found in an aircraft hangar at Heathrow Airport. It was a wild kitten.
What was its name?
Topsy.
Topsy. And you just took to it. You were very fond of it.
Well, Topsy sadly ran away, as wild cats might do. But we were a cat family.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I think a lot of people who want to be vets, they start because they like animals. And then the reality is not quite the same, isn't it? No, that was just a childish dream to be a vet.
Yeah.
So nothing ever materialised from that.
Now, the fact of the matter is, you were really born to be a guide. But work-wise, you went to university, is that right, to start with?
Yes, and...
And what did you read?
Well, English literature. Well, I think I spent most of the time not reading English literature, more of the time in inverted commas, social activities. But I did get involved with the drama group, and we did a lot of plays and so on, so acting and directing and that. So next thing I knew, I was in drama school doing a postgraduate, and then before I knew it, I was on television as an actor, without even realising how I got there, really. But it's just a bit like guiding. I think people get into it and don't quite realise how they got there.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that in a second. But which uni was it?
That was Cardiff.
Cardiff?
In Wales.
What was that like, going amongst the Welsh?
Wales is wonderful. Wales is wonderful.
What did you like about it?
What did I like about the Wales? I think the people of South Wales are wonderful. And it's definitely different on the other side of the River Severn. You could see out to the hills where Castle Coch was sitting, a sort of like a Ruritanian castle sitting on the hills outside Cardiff. They do a lot of filming there. That was a very unusual landscape. Having left my law degree, I then travelled around to Australia, and that set me off on a path of travelling all over the world, which I don't do so much anymore, but I spent a couple of decades doing that.
And what about the German? Where did you learn the German?
Well, yes, it was quite an academic school, so the brightest third did two languages, which is unheard of these days. And then after the school, I went and lived in Germany, in Berlin, and worked in a bank.
Did you?
Well, I didn't do so much work. I think I was more part of the furniture there. They had a scheme since the Second World War to bring friendship between the British and the Germans.
Yeah.
And the Deutsch-Britische Jugendaustausch was the organisation that found you a job in Germany, and I think that was reciprocated by the British for the German young people.
Uh-huh.
And you lived and worked in Germany for 6 months. And, yeah, various jobs, the supermarket jobs. I was fortunate to be working in a bank, the Berliner Volksbank, Mehr als Geld und Zinsen.
And so this is all news to me about this third language. What was that? Was that French then?
Well, we all did French at grammar school.
Uh-huh.
And they selected the top third in the year to go on and do German.
Yeah.
I remember one boy was almost kicking and screaming and crying because he was fearful of the strict Northern Irish German teacher who had a reputation for for being very scary.
Oh. Now, I know you wheel the German out from time to time. Would you be able to guide in German?
Well, I used to, didn't I?
Oh, did you?
I think before COVID, I think things have changed a little bit. But,
uh-huh.
Yes, I did. I did. I think my first tour after I qualified as a guide, the first tours I did were on coach, taking German people around the south of England.
Uh-huh.
This is before I was doing my walking tours with London Walks. So coach work, staying in hotels and seeing parts of southern Britain, which many British people don't get to see.
Uh-huh.
Which the Germans liked going to the less explored parts, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yes, that was before I really started specialising in walking tours with London Walks.
Yeah. And what about the guiding? How did you actually find your way? I mean, nobody growing up thinks, oh, I want to be a guide when I
grow
up.
Nobody. No, it's a mystery. So it's a profession that sucks people in, which sucks people in from all sorts of other, in some way, related professions. So I think London Walks has people who are teachers, the didactic side. Then some people are the performers. They have a background in acting, and others are specialists in, they are journalists, or they've written books. But it's many people train and study and gain the blue badge qualification, which I did down in Sussex, where I was living in the 1990s. And met people on the course who said, well, if you really want to make this a full-time job, then study the London course, gain the London Blue Badge. And that was my gateway into London Walks.
Mm-hmm. And was it somebody who told you about that course? Or, I mean, can you remember specifically? Huh?
Well, a friend of mine from university was a guide in Manchester, and he'd studied the Blue Badge course in Manchester. He told me about it. I looked into it. It was the South East of England Tourist Authority, which subsequently disappeared. They organised the courses. So you had an interview. I had an interview. And then I think around 30 or 40 of us, I forget, did the course for a year. It was great fun. And but the problem is the South East of England, Kent, Surrey, Sussex, the work there would be very seasonal. But with London, I think London and Rome, I may be wrong, but they're the only two cities in the world where it's a full-time profession for thousands of people to guide all the time through spring, summer, autumn and winter.
Uh-huh.
Whereas in the regions of Britain, it tends to be a more seasonal job and a lot of people do it part-time. But in London, there's a lot of professional, thousands of professional tour guides, many of whom at least have the Blue Badge qualification, although not all London Walks guides are Blue Badge guides, yeah. Obviously.
And did you take to it immediately? Did you like it immediately?
Yes, different aspects appeal, I think, at different stages of your life. But one thing is, which is almost mind-boggling, is that you get to meet so many people from so many far-flung parts of the world in a relatively short period of time. So it's quite an intense experience in that way. It's strange, it's very unusual. Because with London Walks, we have people from all over the world. For example, last night, On the Jack the Ripper tour, I had people from Australia, I had people from the United States. We get people from the continent, Germany, Holland, Belgium, the Far East. So, yes, it's there's not many professions where people in this country would get to meet such a diverse range of people from so many different places.
I completely agree with you. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And it's not just that they're from all over; it's also that they're fun and they're interesting. And
yes, it's tours do tend to attract people who are curious, who have that curiosity within them, and want to know, want to find out. And I think London Walks especially so. Rather than say that the no disparagement went to the coach companies, they do a good job. But people with London who come on a London walk, they tend to be intellectually curious and willing and eager to learn.
Mm-hmm. Can you anybody come to mind in the last few months that just? I mean, I met a virologist, which was so interesting what he had to say about COVID. On Sunday, I met a young couple from India. And I think they were from Bangalore. They told me about a garden there that's called a book garden. And, people go and read. I mean, people go and read in parks, but this is specifically a book garden. And, suffering from an incurable case of bibliomania the way I do, this is just fascinating. I never would have found out about this place had it not been for London Walks. Can you think of any examples?
Well, yes, just last night I was guiding the Jack the Ripper tours, a young man. An interesting name, and I immediately I said, "Is this Iranian?" And yes, his family had come from Iran, moved to America, so his perspective was a little different than the other Americans on the tour. So it's not just where people have come from; it's their family story that if you get to chat to them, that can sometimes be more convoluted and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
In that way.
Simon, what about, I mean, you do the out-of-town trips, that's Oxford and the Cotswolds and Cambridge and the Cotswolds. What about them? I've been on several of them, love them. They're really special. There's kind of no other, I don't want to call London Walks a tour operator, but I guess in a sense we sort of are. But there's no other operation that's doing anything like these.
No.
Tell us about
them. No, they are unique. Well, we take the train to get to our destinations, to get to the area that we're going to explore.
And why is that better than going by coach?
So many ways. If you're stuck on a coach, and I say stuck on a coach, I mean you can get stuck in traffic as you leave London and head to places like Bath or Stonehenge. Inevitably, there will be traffic. You are also constrained. You are seated in a coach for a couple of hours with other companies. We go on the train, which is generally faster, no traffic jams. And secondly, you can stand on the train, you can walk around. There are lavatories on the train. You can stretch your legs. You can walk up and down. You can, if we're traveling in a group, one person could walk over, chat to say the Americans, and then they could go back and talk to somebody seated elsewhere, and people can move around. There's a lot more personal freedom on the train, but it's the speed, and you get directly into the destination. We do on some of our day trips, we use a local vehicle then to take us around, but most of the work has already been done getting us efficiently to the destination, and It's without doubt the best way to see it. There's no rushing. It's not a glorified shopping trip going from souvenir shop to souvenir shop. We really get to explore a place. We get to know it. People get to see more, learn more. It is the best way. And I think more people are starting to see this with us.
So take us through the itinerary, for example, for the one that goes to Oxford and the Cotswolds. So you meet where?
On the Cotswolds, we meet at Marylebone Station. And the train then takes us out to the Oxfordshire countryside, where a vehicle picks us up and we start our drive through the Cotswolds villages, the beautiful part of England. And we visit Minster Lovell, which is a quaint old village, very quiet, with medieval ruins. We have a little walk through there. And then the coach takes us to our next village, which is Burford. It's a larger village. There are antique shops, lovely pubs, wonderful ale, and a beautiful medieval church, parts of which, some of the architecture dating back almost 1,000 years. And there's time to have lunch there. And then we head on to Oxford, where we explore the city centre with its ancient colleges.
So it's sort of, over the course of the day, in a sense, three walks, because there's a little walk in Minster Lovell, is that right?
Yes, we walk in Minster Lovell. The visitors take their own time going through Burford, because some people, they're hungry by that stage, they want to have lunch. And in the afternoon, there's a walk through Oxford, where we also include a visit to one of the colleges, where the students live, study, eat, and spend their lives, most of their lives, as a student. So you get to see the world of the student, whose studies at this world famous, and it's our oldest university as well as being a world famous university.
And so they see one of the dining halls then, is that right?
Yes, every college in Oxford and in Cambridge has a dining hall. They call them halls, simply hall. So the hall is where the students will eat their breakfast, lunch and so on. And also every college has a chapel and a library. We don't go into the libraries, but we usually have a look at the dining hall and the chapel, whichever college we pick. And we sometimes go to different colleges each week.
So it's a bit of the country. Well, I suppose even the trip on the bus. So the train goes to, what's the destination of the train from London?
Well, we've started going to a different station from the one we used to use. We used to go into central Oxford, but I mentioned traffic earlier on, and it can be sometimes busy in the centre of Oxford. So we travelled to a station outside Oxford called Oxford Parkway. There's more space, and we start our journey from there. We do come back from Oxford Station to London, mm-hmm. And we take a faster train to get back, which arrives at Paddington Station.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what time do they get back normally?
We normally get back around 6:30.
And it starts at?
We meet at 9:00. So it's a full day.
Yeah.
But it ensures that we can see as much as possible. And you made the point, it's town and country, it's city and countryside. So it really is the best of both worlds.
And are there some, I don't know, country lanes, country paths, fields?
Yes, depending on the mud. We've had a lot of rain recently for the last 6 months. And some of the pathways can be sometimes a little bit boggy and muddy. But we do see, we generally see some chickens and cows, so you get the countryside experience.
How about lambs?
All lambs, yes.
And gardens, yes. Flowers.
Oh, flowers.
Thatched roof cottages.
plenty. And it is the idyllic English countryside that we sample. And then, absolutely beautiful.
And then a country pub as well. So, Simon, what about the one that's just to the Cotswolds?
Well, there we go further into the Cotswolds. The two villages that we see on the Oxford and Cotswolds Day, they are nearer to Oxford. But devoting ourselves entirely to the Cotswolds, it gives us a chance to explore further afield. We meet at Paddington Station and we head out to the small town of Kingham. And then a coach picks us up and takes us on a beautiful journey, twisting and winding our way through villages and towns such as Stow-on-the-Wold, where the wind blows cold. And beautiful architecture built using local stone, Cotswold stone. And then we head on to Chipping Camden. Well, the coach drops us off just outside the town of Chipping Camden on a pathway. It's the Cotswolds Way, which is a 100-mile long-distance path. We don't worry, we don't walk all of that. But the path takes us down. We do see some sheep and lambs, which is what you wanted. And then we head down into Chipping Campden, which is an old market town dating back centuries. And lovely vernacular domestic architecture. The street is beautiful. And we do a guided walk through there, and then an extended lunchtime so that people can enjoy the local pubs or wander around. But there's always adequate time to explore Chipping Campden. There's also a nice museum there which focuses on the work of Charles Ashby, who was a sort of bit of a disciple of William Morris in the late 19th century. He was a man who encouraged working class people in the East End of London to head out to the Cotswolds to revive the ancient crafts. And there's actually one family, the Hart family, who have been there for more than a century in Chipping Campden, still producing silverware. So it's a very, very unusual, very, very interesting place.
So that's Chipping Campden. What was the first one that you went to?
Stow-on-the-Wold.
Stow-on-the-Wold. And then are there two more?
Well, after lunch, our journey continues and we head out to the valley of the River Eye. So we leave Chipping Campden and driving through the countryside, we see again beautiful villages, and the coach trip will then drop us off at the top of the valley of the River Eye, and we descend, we walk down the valley to our next village called Upper Slaughter. It's one of the two slaughters, Upper Slaughter and Lower Slaughter. And then, having seen the medieval church there and the beautiful view of the ford of the river with the ducks and swans swimming, we then follow the line of the river, cross a little bridge, and wander along the valley of the River Eye towards Lower Slaughter, where there's a beautifully picturesque old mill on the river. It's a beautiful sight. And then, if people wish, they can either explore the church there in a little bit of free time, or maybe go into the hotel pub and in the 17th century bar enjoy some Cotswolds whiskey.
Really?
What's yes, that? They make Cotswolds whiskey. It's a beautiful single malt, which, I mean, most people associate whiskey with Scotland, but yeah, there is a Cotswold whiskey, and they're very proud that they sell it there in that hotel in Lower Slaughter.
Uh-huh. I mean, that just sounds like perfection to me. I mean, they
not far off.
My guess is they couldn't really do that. Well, I guess they could hire a driver guide, but that's going to set them back £1,000 or something.
I think so. It would be excessive. But no, we I think we offer something which I don't think there's anyone who offers what we offer in the same way. I don't think there is.
I love it. All right, what about Cambridge, Simon?
Cambridge has been described as one of the most beautiful cities in the world, and an intellectual centre as well as a trading town for centuries. It's quite a cerebral day, no countryside, although Cambridge is not a busy city compared to Oxford, which Cambridge refers to as the other place. Yeah, you mustn't mention the O word when you're in Cambridge. It is verboten. But Cambridge, there are no cars in central Cambridge. You will see the students and people, others, locals going past on their bicycles.
See a few bicycles, I imagine.
Yes, you have to mind the bikes because they're silent, but they can be dangerous if you don't avoid them. But it's a lovely, gentle city centre, and we take in views of the Cambridge colleges. Many of them have famous associations with people like the poet William Wordsworth, the slavery abolitionist, William Wilberforce. There is a college founded by King Henry VIII, which is called Trinity, and it's associated with more than 30 Nobel Prize winners, which if you think about it, is probably more than the whole of France, and King's College, with its beautiful, pristine lawn. They call them courtyards in Cambridge, or courts for short, and immaculately trimmed lawns, grass, which you're not actually allowed to tread on. That's a privilege reserved for fellows who are senior members of the college. But King's College has a chapel there where for centuries students have prayed, but it has to be one of, although some would say the most beautiful, if not the most beautiful, Gothic buildings in the world.
Cambridge is famous for punting. What about that?
Well, fortunately, we do have time at the end of the day to go punting. We reserve some time for that.
And seriously?
Yes, punts. We arrange it with a local company, a small firm, who give us a considerable discount on what people would normally pay. So around more than a third off the normal price. And if you haven't tried punting in Cambridge, it's one of those things you have to do before you die. I mean, it's exquisite. We arrange things, the timing is perfect, so that we can arrive at the punting station. We get on the punts immediately. We don't have to queue with the tourists. And we sail down the River Cam. And the visitors sit on cushions and simply watch the world go by as the chauffeur, as they call them, will push the boat along with a long pole. And you take in views which otherwise would not be possible, because inaccessible areas, which only the students can get to, you can see from the river. And we pass under the beautiful Bridge of Sighs at St John's College, based on the Italian bridge of that name. People listening, many may have even been to Venice to see that. Also, Clare Bridge, the mathematical bridge, is very quirky. It's a wooden bridge. And beautiful views of the back of King's College Chapel. It's heavenly. It is heavenly. This is no exaggeration. You glide by. And there's time to do it. And the punters will then bring us back to the punting station. A little walk round the corner. We get back on the coach, return to the railway station, and get back to London again by about 6:30. So it fits in beautifully.
Now explain that to me. So you get on a coach to get to the railway station. Why is that?
It's a very strange quirk of history. In the 1830s, when the British developed the railway system, the first national railway system in the world, the railway company applied to the town council for permission to build a railway station in the centre of town, as one would expect. And unfortunately, the university authorities, who had enormous powers back then, vetoed the railway company's right to build a station. So the thing is, the university did not want a central station in the middle of town, because in Cambridge, town and gown, town and university, it's all very mixed up, and the university authorities, they did not want the students getting on trains, going down to London and becoming morally corrupted.
The flesh pots of London.
Yes, sin city. So they said no, and that's why the station is over a mile from the middle of town. It's
So you've thought of everything. Then. Yes. So you've got a coach that meets them at the station. Is that right?
That's right.
That takes them, so they don't have to walk a mile to get into Cambridge.
No, but since we're using the coach anyway, it's a great opportunity to explore a little bit further afield.
Oh, go on.
And yes, we drive outside Cambridge in the morning to see the village of Madingley. There's a cemetery, the American Second World War Cemetery, the only one in Britain, I hasten to add. And many of our visitors come from the United States, and they are sometimes astounded that this little bit of America, and it is American land with the stars and stripes fluttering on the flagpole there. And there are several thousand gravestones. There's a memorial wall there for the missing in action people whose bodies were never found. And again, it's beautiful. They were going to use it in the film Saving Private Ryan. There was a last-minute decision not to, because the producers wanted to shut off the main commuter road, and you can't do that, Mr. Spielberg. So they filmed the scenes in France. But it was chosen because of its beauty, and it's a very evocative place. And even if they're not American, they do enjoy the beauty of the American Second World War Cemetery.
I mean, that's really thought through in every respect. So,
meticulously planned.
No, but
and honed over the years. Honed. I think most of our tours do evolve with time.
Yeah.
I think that's the same with your tours. You've been doing the Charles Dickens tour for a very long time and so on. And I think we all guides, you don't get stuck in the mud.
Yeah.
You evolve things with time. Things change, circumstances change, new information. And also people's change in taste, I think, has probably changed in the 21st century. So all these tours are in a constant state of evolution.
Simon, how long have you been a London Walks guide?
25 long and bloody years.
25 years?
I think so. Isn't that scary? That's a whole quarter of a century. It seems like
that's
yesterday.
Fantastic.
It seems like yesterday.
That's fantastic. Well, I'm so...
And it keeps you young, as you know, David.
Yeah.
You're the young, fine figure of a man you are yourself.
Well, I'm really, really glad we've got you, Simon.
You're very kind, David, and I'm glad that I've got you. It's a symbiotic relationship. Where would we be without each other? And where would we be without the tourists, or punters, as we refer to them colloquially?
Yeah. So when's your next walk?
Think I'm doing tomorrow morning. Yes, I'm doing a walk around the City of London, which is another area. And I don't want to take up too much of your time, David, but if you have not explored the City of London, and by that we mean the oldest part of London, you really need to do it. Many people, they go and see Buckingham Palace and Big Ben in Westminster. But to see the old city, which has a lot of modern architecture, but it's with little lanes dating back centuries, if you haven't seen the City of London, you haven't really got to understand the soul of London, where it came from. So not just the major tourist sites, but also some other places too.
Well, they don't have to take it from us. They don't have to take it from you. The proof of the pudding is the reviews. I mean, I think you're the only guy that gets one or two rave reviews every single time you do a walk. So.
Wow, I didn't even know that myself. So that's good to know.
Yeah. Well, how many for that Jack the Ripper have you had?
Coming
up to 200?
I think in total, all the guides, including myself, I think we're approaching 300, almost all of them five-star reviews.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple of four stars, but... No, I think I have around 200 of those myself. I haven't counted.
What is it you're doing about that they like so much? I mean...
About the tour, you mean?
Yeah, the Ripper Walk. I mean, what notes are you hitting that maybe our rivals aren't hitting?
Well, to tell the story in an interesting way, it is a sensitive topic. It's the story about several unfortunate women who suffered brutal deaths at the hands of a psychopath. It is rather grim. People are interested. People also, though, it's not just about murder. Some social background of Victorian London. People at the time even were not even conscious of the horrendous poverty which plagued the East End of London where these killings happened. It was a shock when certain reports came out about how the poor were suffering. And I think people on the tour also share a bit of that horror, the social horror. But there's also the horror of... I think there is... I mean, it has to be said, there is a part of us that is drawn towards horror, however much we try to deny it in these modern, enlightened times. It explains the success of horror films, of the dark stories of Edgar Allan Poe. You know, whatever it may be, there's always... Mm. There's that part within us, the horror, the horror, that we're drawn to. I don't know. But I am conscious of the fact that it can be rather grim, and I do pepper the tour with moments of...
Levity. Do you really?
Yes, I do. People have said... I mean, not to do with people's deaths and so on. I mean, it's, but I do try and make it an entertaining tour, notwithstanding the grimness... of the details of what went on.
Yeah.
But also it's not just about Jack the Ripper. I mean, we're exploring an area, the border between the City of London and the East End, which is rich in history, and that's something I like to hone in on as well.
Well, great, and thanks.
No, David, thank you.
We'll be back here again. There's more of Simon Law to find out about, and especially about his guiding.
Part two. Part two. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you, Simon.
You've been listening to This is London, the London Walks podcast, emanating from walks.com, home of London Walks, London's signature walking tour company, London's local, time-honored, fiercely independent, family-owned, just the right size walking tour company. And as long as we're at it, London's multi-award-winning walking tour company. Indeed, London's only award-winning walking tour company. And here's the secret. London Walks is essentially run as a guides cooperative. That's the key to everything. It's the reason we're able to attract and keep the best guides in London. You can get Schlubbers to do this for £20 a walk, but you cannot get world-class guides, let alone accomplished professionals. It's not rocket science. You get what you pay for. And just as surely, you also get what you don't pay for. Back in 1968, when we got started, we quickly came to a fork in the road. We had to answer a searching question. Do we want to make the most money, or do we want to be the best walking tour company in the world? You want to make the most money, you go the Schlubbers route. You want to be the best walking tour company on the planet, you do whatever you have to do to attract and keep the best guides in London. You want them guiding for you, not for somebody else. Bears repeating, the way we're structured, a guides cooperative, is the key to the whole thing. It's the reason for all those awards. It's the reason people who know go with London Walks. It's the reason we've got a big following, a lively, loyal, discerning following. Quality attracts quality. It's the reason we're able, uniquely, to front our walks with accomplished, in many cases, distinguished professionals. By way of example, Stuart Purvis, the former editor and subsequently CEO of Independent Television News, and Lisa Honan, who had a distinguished career as a diplomat. Lisa was the governor of St. Helena, the island where Napoleon breathed his last, and, some say, had his penis amputated. Napoleon didn't feel a thing, if things the mot juste. He was dead. Stuart and Lisa, both of them CBEs, are just a couple of our headline acts. Or take our Ripper Walk. It's the creation of the world's leading expert on Jack the Ripper, Donald Rumbelow, the author of the definitive book on the subject. Britain's most distinguished crime historian, Donald is, in the words of the Jack the Ripper A to Z, internationally recognized as the leading authority on Jack the Ripper. Donald's emeritus now, but he's still the guiding light on our Ripper Walk. He curates the walk. He trains up and mentors our Ripper Walk guides, fields any and all questions they throw at him. The London Walk's aristocracy of talent, its all-star team of guides, includes a former London mayor. It includes the former chief music critic for the Evening Standard. It includes the chair of the Association of Professional Tour Guides and the former chair of the Guild of Guides. It includes barristers, doctors, geologists, museum curators, a former Museum of London archaeologist, historians, university professors, one of them a distinguished Cambridge University paleontologist. It includes criminal defense lawyers, Royal Shakespeare Company and National Theatre actors, a bevy of MVPs, Oscar winners, people who've won the big one, the Guide of the Year Award. Well, you get the idea. As that travel writer famously put it, if this were a golf tournament, every name on the leaderboard would be a London Walks guide. And as we put it, London Walk's guides make the new familiar, and the familiar new. And on that agreeable note, come then, let us go forward together on some great London walks. And that's by way of saying, good walking and good Londoning, one and all. See you next time.